This is Pure Decking for Thursday. I don't know what today is. June 20th, the current year. This is show number 200. I'm really screwing up tonight. Show number 354. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and realizing that I forgot to put a joke. My show notes literally just have and space dot.
Oh, do you hear about the kid who accidentally cut off his left arm and right arm in shop class?
That's impressive. How do you do them both?
Talent. But don't worry, he's all right now.
Okay.
You didn't say you wanted a good joke. Just wanted a joke.
Oh, well, if we're just going to sit here and tell bad jokes, let's see. All right, two parents are investigating their child's room because they think he might be up to something. They start going through his computer, and inside the computer they find, S&M porn. And the mother gets quite concerned because she says, how are we going to punish the kid? We can't spank him. Yeah, bad joke.
Time out.
Time out. Herratz has a joke for us. He just ate so much Culver's, he feels like President Taft. Okay. I'm Morphson. Tonight we have Madman. Obviously, I've been drinking Knob Creek. What are you drinking, Madman?
I'm drinking Sam Adams Summer Ale, and now I kind of want a frozen custard.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind a frozen custard right now either. I may have some ice cream in the freezer, though. Ice cream run in the middle of the show. That'd be good, wouldn't it? So, anyways, let's just dive right into it. Since a small panel tonight, so if the show goes short, well, show goes short. First thing I have up for tonight is a article from Business Insider. Get the link in the chat. There we go. Madman, I threw the entire show notes and TeamSpeak there for you if you wanted to pull them up. A Florida city paid $600,000 in Bitcoin ransom to hackers who took over its computers. A Florida city council voted to pay a ransom of $600,000 in Bitcoin to hackers that targeted its computer systems, and the payout is a sign of how unprepared the U.S. is to deal with a coming wave of cyber attacks. The city council of Riviera Beach, Florida, 50 miles north of Lauderdale, Florida. Pretty sure we knew they were both in Florida. Anyways. But voted on Monday to meet the demands of its hackers in hope of getting back the city's compromised data, CBS News reported. Prepare for disappointment. According to the Palm Beast Poach, The Palm Beach Post. The attack began on May 29th when an employee from the police department opened an email attachment that contained malware. The software quickly spread through the city's computer systems, affecting its email system and even the 911 dispatch operations. The New York Times reported that the hackers demanded their ransom in Bitcoin. The paper said there was no guarantee the hackers would honor their end of the deal after getting the money. CBS reported the council already voted to spend $1 million on new computers after the attack. A spokeswoman for the city told the New York Times that Riviera Beach was working with law enforcement and security consultants. We are well on our way to restoring the city system, she said. Riviera Beach is a stark example, but far from the only U.S. city to be crippled by a cyber attack. Security experts in the federal government and the private sector have repeatedly warned that much of the U.S. public infrastructure is dangerously exposed to cyber attacks, but many institutions have been slow to respond. Baltimore is one of the highest profile victims and has spent much of the past month paralyzed by a cyber attack that froze a large chunk of its computer network. The attack began in early May, shutting down the infrastructure for its email systems and the payment of water bills. As recently as June 12th, local media reported that 30% of the city employees still had no email access and many services would not return to full functionality for months. According to the city's latest estimate, the attack has cost it more than $18 million. Hackers had demanded that Baltimore pay a $76,000 ransom, but the city refused. Elsewhere, a ransomware attack on Atlanta in March 2018 ultimately cost the city some $2.6 million. Albany, New York, San Diego, Sarasota, and Los Angeles Hospital have also faced a similar attack. Tyler Moore, University of Tulsa cybersecurity professor, told The Guardian in June that attackers have found a playbook that is working. They continue to target smaller governments until they find some that are vulnerable and willing to pay. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security warned in 2018 that governments around the U.S. were being hit by malware that is among the most costly and destructive. Small-scale attacks like these, while damaging themselves, could also be a precursor to something larger. Last month, Business Insider published an extensive feature describing how a large-scale cyber attack, particularly one targeted at the electrical grid, could cripple the U.S. Some experts believe U.S. cyber defenses will continue to be ignored until an attack is so catastrophic people are forced to take notice. Probably true. James Andrew Lewis, Senior Vice President and Technology Director at the City Center for Strategic and International Studies, told Business Insider, "I'm often asked how many people have died in a cyber attack. Zero. Wait till they hit a hospital. That's going to change."
I think hospitals might be one of the few public... public-private things that could hit that would be slightly hardened. And why? The reason I say slightly hardened, they're required to keep backups. So when they get hit, they'll just format and reinstall.
Well, and that's...
Now, the question is, how long is it going to take them to do that?
Well, that's your standard defense against crypto lockers and these kind of holding your machines hostage, right? You just laugh at them, format, and get your data back out of your backups, right? But obviously, if they're willing to pay the ransom, they haven't been doing the backups. And generally, with these city governments and smaller governments especially, it's not that nobody knew they should be doing backups. It isn't ignorance at this point anymore, right? It's they just didn't want to pay for it. They didn't want to shell out a couple $1,000s a year to pay for a tape system or one of the offsite backup companies or a freaking Amazon S3 bucket. Just don't, you know, expose it publicly. And, or anything to back up their data. Now, and sometimes, especially with government systems, they're dealing with antiquated software, AS400s and shit like that. So it's not quite as straightforward as just, you know, dumping the hard drive onto a backup server somewhere, right? But still,
on those systems, are they vulnerable to this attack?
The end users are, so kind of. It depends on what those kind of systems are. If they paid a lot of money for some accounting system that runs on, you know, OS2 Warp, they might still be running that kind of crap on the server somewhere. And then just, you know, they've got a translation layer. A lot of times they'll bring in contractors to interface old software into web pages. So you see this a lot with banks, but a lot of other companies will do it too, where in the back end they're still running AS400 or an old mainframe of some description, or some ancient application from the 80s that they paid $1 million for at the time. And then they've brought in another consultancy on top of it to write a screen scraper and have web pages pretend to be, you know, 3270 terminals or something.
And, yeah, I get to play with that a lot.
Yeah, so it looks like a web page, but in reality, there's a screen scraper running somewhere, and it's all ending up in a freaking AS400, right?
And what's sad, the person that trained me was so used to the old mainframe, I actually have the pretty window shit turned off.
So
it gets in the way.
It would, because a lot of time those old school systems were just a text screen with the fields you needed. And once you got proficient at using it, yeah, a lot of times it was faster. It's the same reason you see a lot of sysadmins live on the command line. It's faster than having to hunt through menus and click on shit, right?
Yeah. I wonder if anyone told the writer of this article, we don't have an electric grid. We have hundreds or thousands of electric grids.
No, probably not. But, you know, they're just saying that to be dramatic.
If they hit a target, I mean, they're going to aim for a big one, like New York. So millions of people could be out of power. But the rest of the country will be fine.
See, if I was wanting to do something catastrophic, I wouldn't just turn the power off. If I could get into a power system and actually screw with the electricity generation enough to turn it off, I would do something a little bit more devious. Like, say, change the AC cycle.
Oh. And depending on where in New York, New York was originally wired with DC power. They actually have a lot of little power stations throughout the city.
So, think about something like screwing with the AC cycle, right? Instead of 120, now it's running at 300.
You'll see the hot... I was thinking lower it, because then you'll see the lights flicker, and that gives you a headache.
Yeah, but you can actually see
turn your computer off, because it's not used to running on such a low power wattage.
See, you could ramp it up to European the standards, and then anybody who's smart could figure it out and just flip the switch and on the back of the power supplies and keep going, whereas if you didn't know that, you're going to blow up a lot of equipment. But then, of course, anything that's dependent on the cycles for keeping time, like old clocks and some motors and stuff like that, are going to run really weird, you know, or you put it at some weird value, right? You know, not like drastically high or drastically low, but like, you know, instead of 120, put it at like 98, because then stuff's going to work, but badly.
I'm trying to play the original Pac-Man.
Yeah. No, it slowed the CPU down.
Up. I have this all memorized, you bastards. What are you doing?
You know, or turn it up to like 160. Not enough to blow things up, but enough to really cause a problem. It'd probably take people forever to figure out what's going on. But,
Yeah, how often do you think this would a voltmeter and ohmmeter pick? No, I don't think either of those would pick that up.
An oscilloscope. You would need an oscilloscope to pick that up. Although I suppose a trained electrician
with those sending laser messages.
Now that said, if you've got a trained electrician who's pretty good with the voltmeter, they can probably figure out that the cycles are off, but. That's because they're taking readings from various locations and doing the math, as opposed to just looking at a screen, right? But I actually got a little pocket oscilloscope off eBay, so kind of useful. The nice thing about it is because it's not running on AC line, I don't have to worry about the ground screwing with the readings.
Data backups are getting so cheap now.
Oh, sure. So it's just frustrating because what this is, it's negligence. It's just pure negligence. You can get, and not even super, it's not cheap, but I mean, it's not even crazy expensive to properly maintain, you know, your end user machines so that they've got a little bit of anti malware on them. You'll have to spend some money on a decent one, even though they are free ones, but that's kind of a violation of the license to use the free ones in businesses on most of them, I think. But you know, that doesn't stop people. So, I mean, you could just deploy one of the freebies. What is it, Avast or Avira or one of the or something like that, or AVG. That's the one I'm thinking of. But you're probably better off getting a contract through. Fuck, how many of them are there? I mean, you know, pick one, right? You know, some are all antiviruses suck, but I mean, you know, pick one and run it. It might stop this kind of crap. You know, have backups of some description, tape drives, cloud backup, fucking hard disks that get unplugged. I mean, it's not that hard. You just have to pay people to do it and give them their fucking, you know, equipment that they need to pull shit off. And, you know, let them run it. The guy's supposed to do backups needed to keep up his Candy Crush score. Gotta, yeah, maybe. Cycross, you never know, it's a government employee. I mean.
Oh, and I bet they got infected by just somebody opening up an email from a Nigerian prince.
That's what they said.
Is not a, this is not a virus. I swear you've won the lottery.
Well, you know, too, they're talking about, oh, they figured out they can target governments because governments are behind. Well, it's the same attacks they were doing to businesses a few years ago, but most businesses have caught up to speed with this game and, you know, are starting to harden their systems and do proper backups so that it's getting really hard to get ransoms out of small businesses or even medium-sized businesses. So now they're going for governments because the governments are the ones who haven't... They're giving these guys a lot of credit for, oh, they're targeting... No, they're not. They're just targeting anybody they can get, right?
These are the ones that they're getting.
Yeah.
They're still going after Lowe's, Big Lots, and Bank of America. It's just they've gotten wise.
Or sued enough times that they're finally, you know... Actually, that's usually the case. It's not so much that they've gotten wise. It's just they've gotten bitten enough times that they have to deal with it.
Hey, sometimes wisdom comes from experience.
Yeah, but it's usually better when it can be somebody else's experience, you know?
You're giving them too much credit. It takes a very good man to learn from someone else's mistakes. But we keep making the same ones over and over again. They've all been made before. I mean, we're an old enough species. Just about every way you can fuck up has been done.
Yeah, but, you know, thanks to you watching Mad Men, I know better than to, anyways.
Yeah, always wear pants. Leave it at that. Always fucking wear pants. Denim is good everywhere.
So, you know, I didn't have to make that mistake. I just had to point and laugh at you as you made it. But
and if a pharmacist says go to the doctor, they might mean it. Maybe. You never know.
It's entirely possible.
Trust them.
Entirely possible. You have anything else on this one?
Oh, backups. That's the answer to that problem. Although, I wonder at what point did the hackers hold onto that Bitcoin for a bit? Because it may have gone up in value.
Shoot, no kidding, right? Like, I had $70 in Bitcoin, I don't know, 4 months ago. I don't remember exactly. It's almost up to 200 now. So it's like, fuck. So it's like, I need to figure out what I need to figure out, do I pull it because I've made money and I'd be winning now? Or do I just let it sit hoping for more? Because it's kind of playing roulette at this point, right? I mean, I thought about pulling it when it got up to 160 because it's like, well, shit, I've got $100 over where I started. I should stop while I'm ahead. It's like, eh, I'll let it ride. So, because it's not an investment, it's gambling. I mean, let's be real.
At this point, you haven't made any money. Just remember that. You don't make money until you sell it and pocket the difference.
True. Very true. I'm referring to the perceived increase of value.
Yeah. Now, you might win by holding on a little longer, and it might go up some more. I mean, Iran is kind of trying to cut oil supply, and that generally makes anything perceived as a commodity go up. Gold and silver are on their way up again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, shoot, we're pretty much trying to stage a fight with them at this point, right?
There's not going to be a war with Iran.
Might be some bombings of Iran, but I wouldn't call it a war.
Yeah, maybe some eventually, but I doubt that's going to happen anytime soon. Iran wants us to bomb them because they don't think we're going to do a regime change. And if we don't do a regime change and just bomb them, they can get their civilian populace to stop protesting and rebelling and wrap themselves around the flag of patriotism and go against the evil overlords bombing them.
At work today, somebody asked me if I had an extra Raspberry Pi 3 they could, or an extra Raspberry Pi they could borrow. And I'm looking, 1, 2, 3. There's like 4 on my desk that I'm not doing anything with at all. Pretty sure I told them I wasn't sure. It's like, yeah, I'll have to check. Let me open the drawer of extra computers.
I mean, you could always wire them up and have them start mining Bitcoin again.
Yeah, because that worked so well the first time.
Eh. Everyone plays their own sorts of lotteries.
True. All right, let's move on. Next one is from ZDNet. Data breach forces medical debt collector AMCA to file for bankruptcy protection. So I'm covering this because it is nice to see a company actually having consequences for data breach, you know, as opposed to some other, you know, companies that have had data breaches and nothing happened, a la, you know, Target or
Sony. Sony again.
Yeah, so Sony multiple times. Credit score company, which, you know, they got some bad press for it, but nothing actually happened business-wise.
Oh, that's because I can't not do business with them fucking bastards.
Yep. So, anyways, a U.S. medical bill and debt collector, American Medical Collection Agency, has filed for bankruptcy. And, of course, it's a debt collector, too, so it's like, you know, and nothing of value was lost. But we both know they're just going to sell the debt and be fine. But, anyways, has filed for bankruptcy protection in the aftermath of a disastrous data breach. AMCA was hacked last year in a time period estimated to be from August 1st, 2018 to March 30th, 2019. Almost a getting on a year that they were in their network. Damn. Resulting in the theft of information from corporate clients, including Quest Diagnostics, LabCorp, BioReference Laboratories, CareCentrix, and Sunrise Laboratories. These companies in question use AMCA's payment portal to bill their medical customers. At least 20 million U.S. citizens have been impacted by the security incident, in which the hackers responsible ransacked AMCA's internal systems to pillage user data, including names, social security numbers, addresses, dates of birth, and payment card information. The stolen data was later advertised for sale in underground web forums. Following the disclosure of the data breach and the reveal of its widespread impact, multiple class action lawsuits were filed against Quest Diagnostics, AMCA, and LabCorp. Victims claimed there was an unnecessary delay in informing victims. HIPAA standards may not have been met, and lack of adequate security may not have been in place to protect their personal information. Well, HIPAA standards are one of those ones that are kind of similar to PCI in that if you get hacked, you're no longer meeting those standards. PCI is worse than HIPAA about it. HIPAA actually has, you know, regulations and specifications. PCI actually stipulates that you have not been breached as part of the standard. So you can be in compliance with every technical requirement, but if you're breached, you're not in compliance. So it's just a game they play, right? But anyways, U.S. regulators are also investigating the incident, and there are now the ruinous consequences of the data breach have led to AMCA's parent company, Retriever Masters Credit Bureau, Inc., to voluntarily file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. According to the Chapter 11 declaration filed with the Court of the Southern District of New York, AMCA first became aware of a potential security incident when a disproportionate number of credit cards that interacted with the company's web portal were linked to fraudulent transactions, i.e. the FBI told them. While the portal was closed down and an investigation was rapidly launched, the data breach caused a cascade of events leading to the bankruptcy request, the most notable being a severe drop in business. No shit! Yeah, don't use them. They'll steal you get your credit card stolen and go with them. Well, gee, I guess I'm going to go with somebody else. Let's see.
Yeah.
Almost immediately upon learning of the breach, LabCorp unqualifiedly and indefinitely terminated its relationship with the debitor, the filing reads. Soon after, Quest Diagnostics, Conduent, Inc., and CareCentrix, Inc., which together with LabCorp were the debitor's four largest clients, stopped sending new work to the debitor and all terminated or substantially curtailed their business relationships with the debitor. This is one of those industries where reputation must matter, because the moment their reputation was gone, so was their company. The filing adds that the data breach resulted in enormous expenses that were beyond the ability of the debitor to bear. Cybersecurity forensics bills of roughly $400,000, IT support costs, severe restrictions that were put in place to protect AMCA's network from further intrusion, looming court cases, and the loss of valuable business partners have all taken their toll. AMCA has been unable to determine exactly what data has been compromised and so has been forced to pay out over $3.8 million to inform over 7 million people who have been potentially impacted via mail. This figure alone is more than the company had to hand, forcing AMCA to take out a loan from the CEO and founder, Russell Fuchs, just to meet his expenses, or to meet this expense. By filing for bankruptcy protection, the business will continue on as usual as AMCA seeks to pay off its creditors. Employees too have suffered, with AMCA's workforce being cut drastically from 113 employees to 25 on the date of the petition. Oh, so this wasn't that big of a company. They just had big contracts. Oh, man. I was thinking this was a bigger company than it was. Fuchs has asked the court to consider a motion which will ensure the firm's remaining staff will be paid during the process. Accordingly, the debtor has filed the instant Chapter 11 petition in order to allow it breathing room to appropriately evaluate its pool of remaining assets and liabilities, cost-effectively respond to regulatory demands, and ultimately to wind up of its business in an orderly fashion through a liquidating Chapter 11 plan. So, yeah, this company is done.
And it said debt collection, but it seems like it was more like a billing service.
I think it's both. I mean, it's collections, right? So they probably were doing the portal servicing, so just providing the front end. And then if somebody went delinquent, then they would handle the collection agency. So they were probably just contracted to handle all the billing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not uncommon. But, yeah. Yeah, this company's done. One breach. Of course, it was a total breach. But this is why you don't fuck around with your security. You have to have monitoring, especially in systems that are moving money through them, especially money of significant quantity. You have to have monitoring. You have to have segmentation. You have to have testing and regular. Well, I mean, you need security on staff. I'm betting with 113 people, they didn't have a security team. They had an IT team that would occasionally do, you know, one or two of them would probably be their security guys. Right?
You think they did any network segmentation?
Of course not. That shit's hard. Nobody wants to deal with that. What? ACLs and appropriately monitoring what's talking to what? No. See, and the giveaway is that they noticed that, well, you know, a lot of customers who use our portal were showing up in fraudulent transactions. That means they had no clue and the FBI told them.
Oh, do you think they even bothered with access for different employees?
Probably not. Most companies, especially small companies, when you're dealing with 100 people or less, usually don't, because it's hard and they don't want to pay for an IT staff to actually manage that. Because think about where you work, right? You work a fairly sizable company. When you need access to a new system, you have to put in a request. It goes through this whole system where it's managed by completely other teams and reviewed. I mean, it's not... I mean, if
it takes a couple hours for me to get into another program that I don't normally have access to.
That's actually pretty good. For a lot of companies, it's a process of days, even weeks.
Oh. Yeah, the longest I think I've had to wait was 48 hours.
Yeah, so yours is doing pretty good. But, you know, the point is that for many companies of size, it's quite the process to get access to a new system. So when they're small, they don't want to deal with it, and they don't want to pay for the staff to manage it. So it's instead, you know, they'll have a handful of people who just kind of do it, and most people will have admin access to everything.
What I think was hilarious, the last time I got I needed to get access to a program, I switched positions. My previous position had access to that program. My new position had access to that program. They requested access for my new position requested access for everything that I didn't already have access to that I needed. Didn't request access to the one program because I already had it. When the job officially switched, I lost access to that program because my manager didn't request it as part of my new responsibilities.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, you can't, especially in some of the more higher regulated environments, you can't fuck around with that shit, man. You've got to have it right because it's audited regularly, commonly.
Oh, fucking yes.
Like monthly. So, yeah, I mean, this company's done. Now they're a debt collection company, right? So I don't think anybody's going to shed any tears over them. But, you know, this is, I think you're going to see more and more of this, especially of these mid-sized companies, right?
When I heard debt collection, I thought they were one of the debt collection companies that just bought a spreadsheet of, here are people that are delinquent, and not even bother getting the paperwork showing that the debt was ever signed off on or anything. Because I love those companies. They're hilarious. And I also hate them because they're annoying as fuck.
Yep.
And you can usually get out of debts that they're trying to collect by just going to court and asking, prove that I own the debt. Because they never get the paperwork to actually show it. They just buy a spreadsheet from a credit card company.
Well, and they're banking on the fact that most people who are honest about it would be like, oh, yeah, no, I own that. So, you know, they'll pay it off thinking that they're still paying off the original company or whatever.
And they sort of kind of are. I mean, that debt collection company bought it from the original company and owns the debt, pennies on the dollar.
My favorite is I'll occasionally get phone calls for, you know, some name you've never heard of, right? And it's like, Yeah, this person owes on the credit card. And it's like, I have no idea who that is. Well, we have this phone number down for it, and we're going to keep calling if you don't pay it off. I don't know who you are, and I'm not paying somebody else's credit card bill. Well, it's only for $800. You sure you don't want to just pay that off? It's not my debt. And then, you know, you go round and round with them, and then you just block the number, and they go away. But anyways.
Here's what's going to happen. I'm either going to block the number, or I'm going to report you to some regulatory agency for pissing me off.
And it's probably a scam anyways, right?
Possibly. Or I've, instead of arguing with clerks, I've written down random numbers. I'm fairly certain other people have done the same thing. You know the whole I want your email address and phone number?
Yeah.
Instead of just saying I don't have one or I'm not giving it to you, I've given them fakes, which could have ended up being belonging to someone. I mean, they're common names, .google, .gmail, or .yahoo, or whatever.
Yeah, whoever owns, you know, testingaddress@gmail.com is probably getting all kinds of weird shit. So, anyways, next one up is from the Register. Great headline. We knew it was coming. Bureaucratic cock-up triggers 6-month delay of age verification block on porno in the UK. And then to the sub-headline, Ministry of Fun admits it forgot to tell the EU. I'm sure that's not what the ministry's actually called, but for fuck's sake. And the article was apparently updated since I saw it earlier today. The British government is expected to announce an indefinite delay to its controversial legislation requiring age verification for porn users. That's a weird phrase to me. Porn users. I mean, I guess it's technically accurate, but I would think the word viewers would be a more accurate one. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with their naming on this one.
Fair enough. According to Sky News overnight, Secretary of State for the Department of Digital Culture, Media, and Sport, Jeremy Wright, will announce the freeze today. We're told that the regulator overseeing the age verification system, the British Board of Film Classification, was told of the development on Wednesday afternoon. Under the Digital Economy Act 2017, commercial pornographic websites are required to implement controls that prevent individuals under the age of 18 from accessing content starting on the 15th of July this year. But don't worry, the government hasn't suddenly decided that amassing a huge database of people's personal details is a security risk, ethnically questionable, or just plain impractical. No, according to Sky News report by former Reg Vulture Alexander Martin. The holdup is due to DCMS having failed to notify the European Commission in time, undermining the legal bias of age verification. Age verification providers and the Open Rights Group recently called for mandatory certification from the regulator, saying the proposed voluntary scheme fell short in meeting adequate standards of cybersecurity and data protection. The body noted the current guidance on security encryption, pseudonymization, which I think is actually a word, and data retention in the standard published in April is vague and imprecise and often refers to generic industry standards without explanation. At a bare minimum, the standard should specify a list of cryptographic protocols that are not adequate for certification, it said. Updated at 11:31 to add, DCMS Chief Jeremy Wright said in a statement that once his department has actually notified the EU and then relayed guidance in Parliament, there would be a delay of about 6 months. He said, "I recognize that many members of this House and many people beyond it have campaigned passionately for age verification to come into force as soon as possible to ensure children are protected from pornographic material they should not see." Where's my button? I apologize to them all for the fact that a mistake could have been made, which means these measures will not be brought into force as soon as they and I would like. But there are also those who do not want these measures to be brought in at all. So let's make it clear that although my statement is an apology for delay, it is not a change of policy or a lessening of this government's determination to bring these changes about. Age verification for online pornography needs to happen, and I believe it is clear the clear will of the House and those we represent that it should, and in the clear line of interest of our children that it must.
It's not a must, but I do find it hilarious. The whole reason this isn't taking effect is because they fucked up Brexit.
I'm pretty sure that's it, because they said, "Oh, we forgot to notify the EU." No, you thought the EU wouldn't matter by now.
Had they not fucked up Brexit, you'd have to verify your age to wank off.
Not sure how I feel about that.
You know the way they're going to do it on a lot of these sites is just a button. Are you 18? We verified.
Oh, no. We talked about this story a few years back when they first passed this thing.
It was a wank-off license.
Yeah, you were going to have to actually have some kind of a government ID. So there was going to be you were going to be on a list on the government of people who look at porn. And the thing is, I don't know that there was any separation between like regular vanilla, Playboy style porn or the really weird shit on like Motherless. Cause I imagine there could be grades of license. Like if you just want to look at the kind of vanilla shit, that's going to be, like your $10 a month license and you go and you don't really make it on any lists. Oh, I see. You want to go on 8chan. Yeah, that'll be $150 for the license, and you're going on every fucking watch list.
Thanks to IHN, I know that I don't need to buy this license if I've got certain fetishes. I can just go to dog parks.
The fuck?
Furries?
Oh,
there's been a bill passed. Furries can do it at a dog park. Things no one ever needs to know, even the furries.
See, now here's the thing. You figure out what dog park they're using, set up a webcam, and turn up a website and charge people for access.
Oh, God. No.
You never actually have to watch it, but you can make money off of it.
I don't want this to spread. I mean, I'm not opposed to governments cracking down on pornography. I'm only opposed to governments cracking down on pornography. And what I mean is, I don't think it's wrong that they want unlimited viewing. I just don't trust them. Because once you say you can limit pornography, they'll just start classifying everything as pornography that they want to limit. And then I'll have to shoot some bureaucrats.
Or, it's going to start coming up in politics, right? It's going to be like, my opponent's name is on the porn watching list. Is that really somebody you want in office? That kind of shit's going to come up.
I have a name so common it's used for like 20% of the population. Prove it's me. I mean, have you looked at the birthright of Muhammad?
Well, it's not the first name that's a problem. It's Muhammad Alonzo. That one's pretty unique. So, okay. Bad joke, yeah.
Nah, it works. They're moving to Italy, too.
Anyways. Yeah, knee-jerk stuff. I mean, governments, it's censorship is flat out is what it is, and they just really need to stay away from it because they're not good at it.
And the way you would do this is you change your culture. You just make it taboo to look at porn.
Work for the Puritans.
Yeah.
This next one's one RU sent me. This is from ceinquiry.wordpress.com. FBI agent accidentally reveals their own 8chan posts. Attempts to redirect white supremacist rage against Russia. The unsealing of an application for a search warrant by the federal government on 8chan servers has unintentionally revealed that a federal agent has been trolling the site and attempting to redirect the user's conspiracy theories against the Russian government instead of against the CIA or Mossad. The legal case stems from the April 27th shooting at a California synagogue by white supremacist and 8chan user John Ernest. The day of the shooting, Ernest is believed to have posted to 8chan a link to an anti-Semitic paste bin manifesto and a not-so-cryptic suggestion that he was about to commit a murderous act of violence to back up his beliefs. In the accompanying affidavit, this is the shooting in New Zealand that has, you know, completely fucked up that part of the world. Where was I? Da-da-da-da-da. In the accompanying affidavit for the search warrant application, FBI Special Agent Michael J. Rod requests the IP address and metadata information about Ernest's original posting and the postings of all the individuals who responded to the subject posting and or commented about it. Additionally, agents seek information about any other postings coming from the IP address used by Ernest to post the subject posting. In Appendix 1, Rod attaches a series of screen caps from an 8chan thread that took place in the day of the synagogue attack. It's not ultimately clear that Ernest took part in the thread. What is notable is next to the anonymous user label on some of the posts is a U marking. Whoops! So he was still in the same session on 8chan or had an ID set up or something. I haven't actually dug into how these things work. But obviously, his own posts were in the screenshots. And the FBI agent decided to participate in the conversations trying to drive it away. As it turns out, this text is to let the user know that they were looking at their own posts. This means that Special Agent Rod inadvertently exposed himself as 8chan user ID 8F4812 by including these screenshots as his supporting exhibit. Turns out a more complete version of the thread was saved on archive.is before it was deleted. By using Control F on the page and inputting that ID, you can then look at all the posts made by the FBI in the thread. And I'm not going to read the thing out loud, all these quotes here, because it's kind of stupid. But yeah, all of them are blaming Russia and basically trying to debunk conspiracy theories. So, I mean, we all suspected that, you know, FBI, CIA, all these different agents would have people on these sites and these forums and try to direct conversation. This just shows us that they're bad at it. No, I don't think for 1 second any 8chan posters were convinced by this FBI agent to be more suspicious of Russian black ops. At the same time, what the hell was this Fed thinking? It certainly looks like he is attempting, however half-assedly, to get the white supremacists that inhabit 8chan/poll forum to start directing their rage and conspiracism at Russia for a change. This, of course, isn't the first time informants have been caught revealed to be inflaming or attempting to inflame extremists. In 2015, an FBI agent texted ISIS sympathizer Elton Simpson, advising him to tear up Texas. A couple of days later, Simpson attempted to shoot up a Draw Muhammad event in Garland. The article goes on with some conspiracy theory stuff, but it is pretty funny that the FBI kind of outed themselves by sending in screenshots showing that they were screwing around with the forums and posting shit, right? So I'm
they
certain
don't
it happens a lot.
Want to redirect shooters to Texas, that they'll end up dead.
If you really want to have some fun with the FBI and conspiracy theories, look up the FBI 6-week cycle. Just saying. That's but it is kind of funny, especially reading through some of these posts, because it's all pretty much blame Russia, blame Russia, blame Russia. So, but so it's not that the government's not in there screwing around with the forums. It's just they're not very good at it. Next one. This one is from Fortune.com. Researchers at the University of the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, Australia, have found evidence that our frequent use of mobile devices could be fundamentally altering our physiology. Specifically, they're seeing horn-like bone spurs appear on younger adults, the most frequent users of these devices. The good news is, if there is any, is that you're not going to see a generation of kids looking like Triceratops wannabes with horns poking out of their foreheads. The bad news is the spurs are growing at the back of the skull. Here's what researchers say is happening. Frequent users of mobile devices regularly tilt their heads forward to view them. That shifts the weight of the head from the spine to the muscles of the back of the neck, which causes bones to grow in the tendons and ligaments. That could result in a horn-like spur that grows from the base of the skull. Our findings raise a concern about the future musculoskeletal health of the young adult population, reinforce the need for prevention intervention through posture improvement education, the scientists noted in the report, which was originally published a year ago but has come to more prominent attention recently. The study looked at 1,200 x-rays taken in Queensland covering a wide variety of age ranges. One-third of those showed the bone spur, with the frequency decreasing with age. Larger spurs were much more prominent in younger people. Cell phones have been criticized for their impact on human health before, but researchers say this is the first time the body has shown an adaptation to technology and used in everyday life. An important question is what the future holds for young adult populations in our studies when the development of a degenerative process is evident at such early stage of their life. So, anyways, yeah, bone spurs from using your cell phone on the back of the head.
I wonder how early are these kids getting cell phones?
What, the Apple-branded babysitter? Probably when they're, young, toddlers.
Oh, God. A kid under the age of 12 doesn't need a phone.
Dude, look around the next time you're in a restaurant or a store where there's parents around with their kids, and look at how many of them hand their phone to their kids or just give them an iPad or whatever. Just shut them up. It's pretty damn constant. Now, let me ask this, of everyone listening, how many of you ran your hand over the back of your head to see if you had a bone spur there?
Madman? No, I don't.
Madman, did you check for a bone spur on the back of your head?
I don't need to. I wear helmets. I've felt the back of my head several times. I know I don't have a bone spur.
DP View, good job. At least you're being honest about it. Yeah, when I first read the article, yeah, I ran my hand over the back of my head, too. It's like, fuck, I'm on a phone all day. Okay, I don't feel a spike. I must be okay, right? So.
You do know you're old enough that your bones were pretty much set a while ago.
I had Game Boys, man.
Okay.
Same Ooh. Thing.
Yeah, it is. I had portable gaming devices as a kid.
Hell, I had a Palm Pilot in high school.
Although, I still actually played outside with other children.
Yeah,
something I don't see happening very often anymore.
Well, that's because everybody's scared of the big blue room. There could be dragons or weevils or bandits out there. You can't risk the children.
Maybe. That's why you go send your kids out there to find them. You ever go dragon hunting? I did several times. Never found the bastards. They hide. They're worse than deer.
My friends and I didn't go dragon hunting. We went hobo hunting.
Yeah, I found those guys. They run you off sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. We did that in, you know, Hobo Woods.
Hobo Woods.
Yeah.
The fucking name tells you where to find them. You ever try to make it to the end of a rainbow?
Yeah, I think we did do that once.
I end up in a train yard. A CXX run us off. Like, we're almost to the end of it, you bastards. It's right over on the other side of that damn building.
Well done, Psychros. You said that's what the pairing cable was for. Socializing with other people. And she, yeah, that's different. That's not what we're talking about. Okay. Last article I have for today, just because of the quote in it. I'm not going to read the headline. I'm just going to go straight into the article. Kerry Hopkins, EA's VP of Legal and Governmental Affairs, insists that the company's randomized purchases aren't loot boxes, but rather surprise mechanics. In an oral session, evidence session with the UK's Parliament Digital Culture, Media, and Sport Committee, Hopkins compares the mechanics to surprise toys, which have been around for years, whether it's Kinder Eggs or Hatchimals or LOL Surprise. The response to the questions from Scottish National Party MP Brendan O'Hare Hopkins said, "We do think the way they've been implemented, these kinds of mechanics, and FIFA, of course, is our big one, our FIFA Ultimate Team, and it's and our packs are is actually quite ethical and fun, quite enjoyable to people." So EA is telling the British government they think that the that loot boxes are surprise mechanics and ethical.
It's like my Cracker Jack toys, which I think they stopped doing.
Last time
EA
I got a box,
should send Cracker Jacks with the little loot boxes.
Let's see. We do agree with the UK Gambling Commission, the Australian Gambling Commission, and many other gambling commissions that they aren't gambling, and we also disagree that there's evidence that shows it leads to gambling. Instead, we think it's like many other products that people enjoy in a healthy way and like the element of surprise. Obviously, that means EA disagrees with the anti-loot box stance taken by the Dutch and Belgian regulators. They decided, the regulator, not the courts, decided that under their local law, the mechanics under certain circumstances violate the law. So, anyways. It's just, I love it. Loot boxes are surprise mechanics and ethical. I thought it'd be ethical if I got the whole game when I bought it, you know, not had to buy the 3 expansion packs and pre-order it. But, you know, what do I know?
They're ethically neutral. Not ethical or unethical to have a loot box.
Well, it's like a hammer, right? A hammer's not ethical or unethical. If you use the hammer to build a wall, that's ethical. If you use the hammer to cave somebody's head in, not so much. And you can argue there are times where those are flipped, but, the, you know, that's an easy example, right?
Yeah.
So. Anyways. Surprise mechanics. I thought that's what a jump scare was. Surprise mechanics.
Oh no, that's whenever your engine throws a rod. That's surprise mechanics.
Yes, that would be a surprise.
Like, I didn't think it was meant to bend that way, but apparently it was. Damn, I'm gonna surprise my mechanics.
DP View. I try to avoid politics on this show. I mean, they come out, but I don't shoot for them like some shows do. So you're making fun of me for saying building a wall. It's like, oh, Republican Party. No. I was like the wall of a house or a fence, not a political thing. Anyways, let's do this. All right, two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a useful tool, especially if you've happened to, say, take over the computers of a medical debt collector. It's a GitHub link, and I love this guy's username, Need More Cowbell, called Hamburglar. Hamburglar is a Python script that will grep through either a directory that you've given it or individual files looking for quote-unquote interesting information. So this is things like URLs, directories, keys. Where's the full list? I started scrolling around. Here we go. IPv4 addresses, emails, private keys, URLs, IOCs, cryptocurrency addresses, and then anything else that you add via regex and YARA rules. DPView didn't like me calling him on his joke. Anyways. That's right. It's been the bad joke night anyways, right? So but yeah. So like this script's great. Basically, and you get JSON output, so you can basically just go to town searching through operating systems looking for something useful. And I, having done my own share of investigations, can tell you something like this would be extremely useful at times. I mean, sure, you could do a lot of the same stuff with just, you know, clever use of grep and bash scripting. But, you know, somebody's put together a Python script with a funny name. And they even have the Hamburglar GIF on the page. So, you know, hey. And the final thing I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is the PyVPN project, which I don't believe I've actually talked about before. I've talked about PyHole, and this is similar in the regard in that, you know, the installation is, you know, curling in a script and piping it to bash, but this is a automated script to set up OpenVPN on a Raspberry Pi, or well, any Debian install really, but it'll set up OpenVPN 2.4 and walk you through configuring it. So they've got some guides on the site here, but pretty much you just run the script, answer a few questions, boom, you've got a VPN. A very nice little project, and you know, again, along the lines of PyHole, definitely worth the time to run. I don't know that you want to run a VPN on a Raspberry Pi, even like the new ones with the 3, because their network connection is limited to 100 megabit. You might be better off doing something like a Atomic Pi or one of the other, you know, single board machines, like, say, a Tinker board that has a gigabit port on it. But again, it's just a quick and easy way to set up OpenVPN, which can sometimes be a bit of a bear. And, you know, of course, obviously they're targeting the Raspberry Pi ecosystem because Raspberry Pi, even a decent one's like, you know, $40 off Amazon. And, you know, you can set up a little VPN server to play with, right? So, anyways. DPView saying my download doesn't even get close to 30 megabit. Well, it's not just download you have to worry about. It's also upload. Because you've only got one network interface on that Pi, everything has to go in and out of it. So you're only, and usually you don't get anywhere near close to the 100 megabit on the thing because it's actually on the USB bus. So you usually are getting closer to the 50 on the thing. I mean, it depends on what you're doing, right? But if you're maxing out your Pi's network card, you're not going to get near 100 megabit. And since it's only, you know, you've got to do the full duplex through the one Ethernet port, you won't get 30 megabit through a VPN running on a Raspberry Pi, which is why I was suggesting going with something that's got like a gigabit port on it and preferably a little bit more oomph on the processor. I'm not saying a Raspberry Pi can't do it. I just can. It's just you're going to be pretty limited on your speeds. And, of course, it depends on what you're doing, too, right? If all you're doing is, you know, bouncing through your home connection to get around, say, a corporate firewall so you can check some email or something, you know, do you really care that it's not the fastest as fast as it could be? But, you know, if you've got Google Fiber at home or another decent internet speed and, you know, you're going to be doing some significant browsing through the thing, it's probably worth getting something that's got a stronger NIC. But, you know, too, if you work with Raspberry Pi much, then, yeah, you get used to this kind of stuff. Could you run a VPN server on a cluster of, say, 3 Pis? I'm not certain how you'd pull that off. One receive, one send, and no. Because you'd need some method of transmitting the data from Pi to Pi. And if that Ethernet port is already used up receiving, it's still going to send it out that same port, right? So now you could, I guess you could add something over the one of the other USB ports, another Ethernet card, or, I mean, they've got the serial ports broken out on the GPIO pins. You might be able to do something that way, but you're going to get into a pretty difficult to manage scenario fairly quickly with that, because you're going to be translating Ethernet frames into something that you're going to pipe over the serial line on the GPIO pins, or adding another network card on the USB bus, which is just USB 2, which is why even that 100 megabit port doesn't really get capped out, right? Because USB 2 caps out around 54, if I remember correctly. I'm not certain of a great way to do that. Especially when, you know, you can just spend a little bit more money and get like a Tinker board or something that'll do the same thing just as well. Or if you're still wanting to stay on the cheap, go see if you can find like an old used Dell workstation or something, right? So, and again, I'm not knocking the Pi for this particular instance. It'll certainly do the job. The problem is just that the way the network port is on the thing is less than ideal for running significant traffic through the device. Maybe on its Wi-Fi card. I haven't played with the Pi 3's Wi-Fi. That one might have a little bit more leeway, because I'm not certain how. I don't think it's hooked up to the USB bus. So that might be worth trying out. See if maybe you can do the Wi-Fi. Because I forgot that the Pi 3 had Wi-Fi on it, so you might be able to do it that way. Or some combination of the two, where the Wi-Fi, you know, maybe you've got the Ethernet being your receive and the Wi-Fi going back out. Of course, that's all going through the same router, so. Yeah. In any event, that's not the... Raspis don't exactly make for the greatest of network engineering. But they're not designed to, right? They're meant to be just cheap and easy to play with, so. But that's all I've really got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. We just redid the site a few weeks ago to get the IHN archives up. Pure Decking every Thursday. Madman, what's the possibility on IHN this weekend?
Pretty good. As far as I know, RU will be done with whatever he's doing, and I have no plans.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really have much of plans either. Kind of sad, but that's all right. Of course, Galaxy 15 Radio site, the subreddit. Reddit is probably the best way to shoot me messages. At least I'll see that before anything else. Of course, in the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonic, Psychros, DPView, Herats, Iron Angel, and Madman. Psychros, no, I do not believe it's 802.11n. I think it's a BG. Although I'm not certain about that. I know, I'm pretty sure it's on the 2.4s range, so. I don't think it's on the, I don't think it's in the 5 gigahertz range. I don't remember now. I'm trying to look on the thing and see if the chip says anything on a Raspi. No, you have to look it up. But, anyways. Madman, closing thoughts.
If you're American when you go to the bathroom, and you're American when you come out, what are you while you're in the bathroom?
Well, European, obviously.
Obvious. What'd the fish say when it swam into a wall?
The fish don't talk.
Damn. The damn. There. Now, you had extra jokes to make up for the one that you forgot to do at the beginning of the show.
All right.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Johnson goes down and call it a night.
Shut up.